You're locked on The Big Show with Will Nault and Logan Gordon. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
As a reminder, if you missed anything from our first hour, you can catch it wherever you get your podcasts. Spotify, Apple, Google, Amazon. Subscribe now, leave us a comment, and never miss a moment. Plenty of ways to listen. 960 on your AM dial. Stream us at sportsnet.ca/960 or tell your smart speaker to play Sportsnet 960. Welcome back to The Big Show. Will Nault and Logan Gordon along with you. We're coming live from the Iconic Electric and Controls downtown studio in Calgary. Iconic is currently hiring electricians, instrumentation, and telecommunication technicians, and more. Apply at iconicec.ca/careers. Earlier today, Edmonton Oilers GM Ken Holland spoke with the media and confirmed his club's interest in Evander Kane.
What's your level of interest in Evander Kane?
Well, I've talked to his agent. I know his agent's Dan Milstein. I know Dan very well because he was Pavel Datsyuk's agent. I had lots of dealings with Dan Milstein. So I have talked to Dan Milstein, his agent. You know, I'd say to you as a manager, it's my responsibility to, you know, investigate every situation. Talk to managers. So I have talked to Dan.
And there certainly is a lot of investigation to be done with Evander Kane. But for a team that struggles when McDavid and Draisaitl are not on the ice, they could sure use the cheap help, and it'll be interesting to see where it goes from here. To discuss that and a whole lot more, it's a pleasure to welcome to the program down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. He is David Amber from Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada. DA, thanks as always for doing this. How are you, man?
Yeah, happy New Year, guys. How you guys doing?
We're good, and we'll get to hockey in a second, but I know that you are a football fan like all of us. You watched the end of the NFL season on Sunday. You certainly watched last night. That's pretty two pretty good nights of football for us. We've been treated here.
Sunday was one of the best NFL days I can remember, and I was pretty much glued to my couch from the noon game or the 1 o'clock game here in Toronto all the way on. It was fun. It was pretty riveting. Hey, like all those games, and it culminated with, you know, how good was this? We knew the whole Week 18 NFL thing. People weren't sure if it was going to work. It wasn't an experiment. Well, they hit it out of the park. I mean, that was as good as it gets. And it was weird that we're all kind of, a lot of us were sitting back kind of rooting for the tie because that's maximum chaos, you know? And it was awesome. That was a great day of sports, and it was really fun. Last night, the college championship wasn't quite as dynamic, but still, I love watching a winner-take-all scenario for a championship. Nothing better than that in sports.
No doubt about it. Let's dive into hockey head first. I played the comments coming in. I know our colleague Elliot Friedman has talked about this at length. If you missed it, it was on the Jeff Merrick show earlier today. Your thoughts? I mean, you know, there certainly was zero interest in this player at $7 million for the next 3 years. We know he's got his fair share of baggage the last 12 months, but as I said in my intro, for a team that doesn't have a ton of depth, where are you at on Evander Kane to the Edmonton Oilers?
I think they're one of the teams, you know, kicking tires and giving this serious consideration, and I think they should be, quite frankly. We've seen it in the past, these reclamation projects, whether, you know, it was Radulov coming back, numerous times, and we're obviously seeing Tony D'Angelo is landed in Carolina, and that seems to be working out pretty well for him and for the team. And Evander Kane would be sort of the next in the line of guys, you know, brought in under bad circumstances. But one thing we know, just like with D'Angelo and just like with Radulov, is when they want, they can play hockey. And he's a fierce competitor. He's a great player. He is a power forward, legitimate power forward in a league where those are hard to come by, and a legitimate scorer. And whether it's the Oilers or whether it's, you know, one team that I think might be sneakily in this conversation, and they'd have to figure out how it would work, but Vegas, you know, why not reunite them with Peter DeBoer? And they're a team. They're all in. This is all about this year. They went. They have Jack Eichel skating at practice. Imagine if they were somehow able to add Jack Eichel and add Evander Kane as a 1-2 punch, as they, you know, and their owners made it abundantly clear. Like, he wants to win now. He wants to win yesterday. And, I think whatever team Evander Kane goes to, provided they've got the right environment around him and provided he's there committed to play and can kind of just keep that focus, then I think it could be a good fit for someone.
Man, what a vote of confidence it would be from the outside. And, you know, we can all have opinions about Evander Kane, but for a guy like Pete DeBoer to bring him back, I think that would say a lot about Kane. And if you're Kane, you'd love to do that because, you know, you'd love to play for a guy who sticks his neck out for you. But, I can't see it myself just based on where Vegas is at, and they've got enough issues just to work Jack Eichel in. But you're right. I mean, if there's ever a team that has been around any player, you name any player who's in the rumor mill, and you finally, you know, you don't have to go far down the list to find Vegas's name. So I could see it, and it certainly would be, you know, for all those outside that maybe have questions about Kane, to see his former coach take a gamble on him would say a lot, wouldn't it?
It would. And listen, I'm not hearing that rumor. I'm not even trying to create a rumor either. I'm more just saying, I think Evander Kane, the hockey player, Evander Kane, if you just looked at him as a hockey player, all 32 teams are interested.
Yep.
Then when you add in everything that, you know, has transpired from place to place, Winnipeg, Atlanta, Buffalo, you know, it has been drama to say, you know, and that's a euphemism for really what it's been. It's been problems pretty much everywhere. And if he can move past that, and certainly, you know, for a guy who's had a few chances, this could be sort of that ultimate final chance, and he's there on a prove me contract for the rest of the season. It's in his best benefit to just do what he has to do and play as a hockey player, and it'd be in the team's best interest for that to happen as well. So this could be a good marriage for someone. And if you have the right environment, if you're in the right hockey market, in the right environment, surrounded with the right people, maybe, you know, maybe good things can happen. You know, it was funny listening to Ken Holland, and he was very upfront about, yeah, I've had conversations with Dan Milstein about, you know, possibly, you know, Evander Kane's availability. And, you know, one thing that Ken Holland can say that others can't is, oh, yeah, well, we've got, you know, the top two players in the world, and imagine slotting him on the power play with you know, the likes of Draisaitl and McDavid. So, I mean, it would be pretty enticing from Evander Kane's standpoint, I would imagine. But I think he'll have a few suitors that are pretty serious, and he might be able to actually pick his destination. And I'm not sure exactly what would factor into that, but, you know, getting the chance to play with 29 and 97, I'm sure would be pretty high on the priority list for him as well.
No doubt. Final one on the Oilers. You mentioned Ken Holland's press conference today. He talked about it. They started the year 16-5. Since then, they're 2-9-2 and have the second worst record in the NHL. What are you seeing with the Oilers right now, David, and just your overall thought on Edmonton? Is they're also a team that felt like they were, you know, kind of on the verge of needing to push all their chips to the middle. I know before the season, Ken Holland talked about trading his first round pick if the opportunity was there. Now, not really saying as much. I mean, overall, what have you seen here, and really what's been a tale of two halves here for the Oilers in the first half of the season?
Well, I guess we can now, you know, they were first overall on December 2nd, as pointed out by Ken Holland, and they probably weren't as good as that team. I mean, remember, their power play was at 50%, or, you know, like historic great power play, historic great penalty kill. You know, they were finding ways to win games that maybe they shouldn't have been winning. And I don't think they're as good as that team, and they're certainly not as bad as the team we've seen win two of their last 13 games. And as you mentioned, second worst record in the league in the last month and a bit. You know, they're somewhere in between. I think they're a good hockey team. And I think if you kind of dig down a little bit deeper, and I've watched a lot of the Oilers, you know, some of these losses have been, they haven't got the goaltending. And it's not just the save percentage per se, but it's more, when are you letting in a goal, right? And we all saw Grant Fuhr at his best. You know, it wasn't a matter of whether he let in three or four goals, it's when he made the big save. And when he would say, hey, you know, you guys take care, you score the next one, we'll win this game. And he would hold true to his word and shut out the other team the rest of the way. You know, Koskinen, you know, I'm going to pick on him a little bit, but specifically him, he's let in some goals at the time when you're like, oh, that's a backbreaker. You know, it's a 2-1 game, 5 minutes left, and lets in a softie, and that's it. Like, there's no chance to come back. I think if you look at the analytics and you dig a little bit deeper, you know, their expected goals for have been less than they should be producing, and their expected goals against have been more than they should be allowing based on the high danger scoring chances. So I do think this will even itself out to some degree, guys. I think they're a good hockey team, but I think it does go back to, you know, the number one thing in question mark with this team again was going to be goaltending. And between Koskinen and Mike Smith, who's barely had a chance to play this year because of injuries, there just isn't enough there. And, you know, show me a good coach, I'll show you a good goaltender, right? It's the old saying. And,
yeah,
you know, Dave Tippett's a great coach by all accounts, but, you know, no one can outcoach some of the goaltending and the untimely goaltending that we've seen there. And the fact of the matter is they don't have a ton of depth up front, which circles back to the whole Evander Kane thing, right? So they're so reliant on 97 and 29. And when, you know, Zach Hyman got injured and wasn't been producing, and Cassian got injured, and Ryan Nugent Hopkins is injured, you know, COVID, et cetera, all these things have happened. We've seen that there isn't that incredible depth there to pick things up when those two aren't producing. And they're getting outscored, I believe, 2-1 when Draisaitl and McDavid aren't on the ice. I mean, that's not a recipe to have any level of success.
By the way, just quickly on that, I'm not saying he's the answer, but Michael Russo, fabulous reporter out of Minnesota for The Athletic, just reporting minutes ago on Twitter that he's hearing ex-Minnesota Wild goalie Alex Stalock, who's missed the year with a heart condition, has been cleared by his own doctors. He's heading to Bakersfield to begin a comeback with the Oilers. If he passes the physical, he'll need waivers, but if his body holds up, they'll figure out the next steps. So again, not saying he's the answer, yeah, it's a really feel-good story for Alex Stalock, who's been out this year with a heart condition. He is David Amber of Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada. He's our guest here on The Big Show on Sportsnet 960 in Calgary. Logan?
David, I'm curious to get your take on this Canucks group that's been really on fire ever since Bruce Boudreau came over and took over head coaching duties for Travis Green. Now they had to go on a long pause due to the COVID outbreaks that we've seen throughout the league. They have to come back into it against a great Florida Panthers team tonight. Probably the worst timing ever for the Canucks to run into that pause in their schedule. You'd think they'd want to keep the momentum going that they've had with their new head coach rather than stop and pause for 10 days, eh?
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see if they can pick things up. It's been it's funny. We're just talking about Edmonton and this incredible start followed by this dismal last 5 weeks. And look at the absolute opposite for Vancouver, a horrific start. No one was having any fun and everyone was waiting for something to happen. And finally something did happen on the management and coaching ranks, and the team brings in Bruce Boudreau and what do you say, Bruce, there it is. Right. And it's just been an incredible turnaround. The guys are having fun. You know, the guys are out there, and whether it's Hughes or Pedersen or Miller, it just seems like there was they were re-energized and they were kind of waiting for something to happen. And it happened, and, you know, Bruce Boudreau, all the credit in the world he deserves, because I think what he essentially did is he challenged the guys, and not in a aggressive, combative way. I think he sort of said, okay, well, this is a new opportunity. You want to play PK minutes? Show me what you can do. And he's putting the guys like Pedersen out there on the PK, places they had never played before. And I think it sort of re-energized some of the players. And he has this enthusiasm. You know, everywhere Bruce Boudreau's gone, he's had these great upticks right away with the teams, because I think he just brings sort of the grassroots love of the game back to the team. And does it grow old after a while? You know, for all coaches it does, right? The same voice over and over and over again. But right now they've sort of found something and they're running with it. It's interesting, Logan, though. You mentioned this big delay, and it couldn't have been worse for Vancouver because they were on such a nice run. And we're going to find out, you know, how good this Vancouver team is. Just like we're, you know, maybe found out a little bit about Edmonton not being as great as that early season team, and they're certainly not as poor as what we've seen in the last 5 weeks. You know, will the real Vancouver Canucks, you know, stand up here? Because you have Florida, then you've got the defending champs in Tampa. I think they're then off to Carolina on Saturday afternoon. I mean, we saw what that's like. Calgary, you know, talk to Calgary. Well, what was that like for a very good Calgary team to walk into those three buildings? It's not easy. So we're going to learn a lot in the next 5 days about Vancouver. And, you know, I'm excited they're getting Besser and Pedersen back. And, you know, quite frankly, you know, we talked about the problems in Edmonton, and it starts with the goalie. You know, Demko is right there. He deserves Vezina consideration, guys. He's been spectacular, and he's been a big part of why not just Bruce Boudreau behind the bench, but you have a guy in net that's just playing out of his mind right now.
Speaking of returns, one of the biggest stars in the NHL is back tonight, making his season debut for the Pittsburgh Penguins, Evgeny Malkin. will finally play after knee surgery this summer. The Penguins have gone through all sorts of injuries and COVID issues of themselves, including Sidney Crosby not starting the season on time and then being out with COVID. And I'm just curious from your perspective, David, do we give Mike Sullivan and some of the supporting cast in Pittsburgh enough credit behind those superstar guys? Because I would have thought beginning of the season, no Crosby, no Malkin, questions in goal, lots of contract years coming up there, some big decisions to be made. This sort of has the makings of a tumultuous start. They're coming off of a 10-game winning streak that was just snapped by Dallas the other night, and now they're getting Evgeny Malkin back in the fold tonight.
Yeah, I mean, we don't give Mike Sullivan enough credit. First of all, he's obviously won two Stanley Cups, to start his head coaching career there. There's that. But above and beyond that, this was the biggest challenge. And, I'll be honest. I was one of those teams that looked at Pittsburgh and said, they're in a position where we might see regression. We might see this incredible streak of playoff appearances come to an end this year. And that wasn't to discredit Sidney Crosby or Malkin or Letang or anyone, but it was more just looking at the whole body of the team, right? I mean, 15 straight playoff appearances, the best mark in the league, and just it's a young league and aging players, and not starting the season with your two superstars in Crosby and Malkin, it had disaster written all over it, like you said. But somehow Mike Sullivan has preached this incredible structure, and guys who've maybe been along for the ride, and we've always looked at them as these like sort of complementary pieces, are a little bit better and they deserve a bit more credit, whether it's the Gensels or the Russ or, Rodriguez has been sensational for them this year. So it's been a really good story. It might be one of the best stories in the NHL this year, the Pittsburgh Penguins rattling off those 10 straight wins, sitting in a playoff spot, and now they get back, a future Hall of Famer in Malkin. It's really interesting to see what this team's going to do. And Brian Burke was quoted a few days ago as basically saying, I think we're Stanley Cup contenders. He went in there, I think, not knowing what he had and would they have to strip it down and figure it out. But, while you have Crosby and now you have Malkin back, you still have two preeminent superstars and the surrounding cast is pretty damn good. And as you pointed out, you've got an A1 coach in Sullivan. And right now, Tristan Jarry has proven to be a pretty elite goaltender as well. So you have all the pieces in place, and it's going to be really interesting to see how Pittsburgh does down the stretch here.
A premier matchup on the schedule tonight has the Maple Leafs with a showdown in Vegas against the Golden Knights. Toronto 22-8-3, fourth in the NHL in points percentage, while the Golden Knights lead the Pacific Division. Of course, lots of talk in Toronto coming off that 5-4 overtime loss to the Colorado Avalanche on Saturday that ended a four-game winning streak. There hasn't been a lot of talk I've found, David, positive or negative around the Toronto Maple Leafs this year. And I wonder if that has to do with the fact that this is still a wait and see what this team does in the postseason sort of narrative around Toronto. If that's still the overhanging cloud to this team that, yes, we expect you to do these sort of things in the regular season, but until you show us what happens after seven or six games in the first round, all of it's irrelevant to the big storyline in Toronto, I guess.
Yeah, listen, Logan, I couldn't have put it better. I mean, it's one of those fool me once, shame on you, fool me 54 times, shame on me, right? Like no one cares how they're doing in the regular season. But none of it matters because the true grading of this team, the true feel for this team and have they accomplished what they're setting out to accomplish will all come down to whether they can win a playoff round for the first time since 2004, effectively exercise all the demons from the last 5 years in the postseason. And we all know, there were some bad upsets in those five playoff series, but nothing will even come close to what happened last year against Montreal, right? Like it's your heated historical rival. You have a 3-1 series lead and all signs point to you cutting through and getting to that second round, and who knows what would happen against Winnipeg, but all signs pointed to some level of success, taking at least that little step towards the Stanley Cup. And, then you have it just come crashing down in such dramatic fashion. So the Leafs have been very good this year. They've been very disciplined. Jack Campbell has been absolutely superlative. They've had great balance. They've had a level of team toughness that we haven't seen, in the last 4 or 5 years. And I'm not talking about fighting, but just overall sort of, you know, us against the world mentality and kind of greasy guys like Bunting who've come in and have played a really good role and picked up some of the slack for the loss of Zach Hyman. But again, none of that means diddly as far as Leaf fans are concerned, simply because it's going to come down to when push comes to shove, can they win a playoff round for the first time in nearly two decades? And guys, I can tell you something that's being talked about quietly here is the Leafs need to win this division. That's the feeling. For as good as we just talked about Pittsburgh being guys, you know, that first round, think about those top three teams in the Atlantic, Florida, Tampa, and Toronto. Two of those three teams are going to meet in the first round of the playoffs. And that's going to be ridiculous. That's going to be a devastating situation for those two teams because it's going to be just tooth and nail to get through to the second round. So if you can win the division, I'm not saying Boston or Detroit or Pittsburgh or whomever might be in that wild card's a pushover, but I think you like your chances a little bit better in those matchups than having to take on one of those teams in Florida.
And I mean, hey, Toronto fans would love another matchup with Boston, right? I mean, come on.
It's funny, what could go wrong? Like, the pick your poison.
Yeah, it is funny when you think about it.
Yeah. Sorry, go on.
No, I was going to say, what could go wrong? Maybe it's like the Washington-Pittsburgh, right? You finally get over that Boston hump and you break through and go all the way. I don't know, but it'll be fun to see. And man, it's crazy when you talk about the world we're living in. By the way, David Amber is Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada with us. Just a few more for David, and we'll let him go. But, you know, it's funny, the world we're living in right now. The last time the Leafs were in Vegas, Mike Babcock was their head coach, and that was the last coach or last game he coached as a behind the bench in Toronto, November 19th, 2019. Wow. So, been a little while. And just quickly, I know you made reference to it a little bit earlier on in the conversation, but Jack Eichel back skating, it's going to be a different looking Vegas team when he's healthy. And I know a lot of people are waiting to see what they're going to do. And I know it's been talked about, will they bring in a Johnny Boychuk type contract that can throw on LTIR? I don't know what they're going to do, David, but man, Jack Eichel adding to that team, that's going to be fun to watch.
It really is. And first and foremost, you know, let's just look at this from a human standpoint. We saw that wide receiver on Alabama get hurt early on in the national championship game. And apparently it's kind of severe, and you know, people talk about his NFL opportunities and all that sort of thing. Like, we forget this is, it's tough. I mean, Jack Eichel's been through hell and back, right? And I'm just happy for him as a person, quite frankly. You know, they said it would take about 2 months after the you know, artificial disc replacement surgery, and here we are 2 months almost to the day. He's out on the ice practicing, and the signs really look good, and there's a lot of positivity there, and I'm just happy for him, because there's a guy that, you know, like all the kids and young adults who go, they get to the NHL, like they put in so much time to get out to this dream, right? And to have that sort of stripped away and not knowing if you're ever going to get that opportunity again, it's got to be devastating, you know, emotionally. So for him to be out there and seemingly on a path to return is fantastic. And yeah, it does upend the whole sort of, you know, how you look at the Western conference, how you look at the Pacific division. I mean, if Jack Eichel is 90% what he was previous to the surgery, yeah, look out. I mean, that's a formidable team. To me, they probably become the Stanley Cup favorites if he is the Jack Eichel of old. So it's very exciting time, and we can't wait till his return comes. And, you know, it's going to make for a really fun sort of stretch run to see what happens leading up to the trade deadline. And we got the Evander Kane situation, and then we got the trade deadline. And, you know, hey, the Flames former captain, Mark Giordano, there's a ton of talk that, you know, he could be migrating from Seattle, essentially. And I'm sure he would pick up a pretty nice package of prospects and picks to the Kraken. So it's going to be really exciting to see how sort of the musical chairs goes. And if Eichel comes back and is as strong as he might be, guys, that's going to make a lot of other GMs in the league sort of take pause and sort of say, what do we need to be able to compete with a team like that?
Just quickly, like 20 or 30 seconds or less. I know, just because we're proud, and he's from our neck of the woods. They're a team that many picked to go deep early on in the season or before the season began. It didn't start out well. They had COVID and injury issues, but now looking like the juggernaut they are, and a team that nobody wants to face. The Avalanche in Nashville tonight, and they're led by a guy who we might see a defenseman score 35 or 40 goals. Cale Makar is must-watch TV.
you might argue he's right there with McDavid. Like, he's sensational. That goal he scored in overtime by Kirby Dach was phenomenal. The way he straddles the line, we saw it on Saturday versus the Leafs, that pivotal second goal, which really effectively got them back in the game. He's world-class. I don't know what's the better way to put it. I don't even know who the comparison is. You know, people are talking about Paul Coffey. I'm not even sure, like, what the right comparison is. But, man, is he smooth, smart, young, sensational. It's fun. It's a lot of fun, guys. And be pretty proud to have him from my neck of the woods, that's for sure.
Should be a good matchup, too, between two teams. Nashville's been a big, big surprise. It's a marquee matchup in the Central tonight. Seven games on the schedule, just a couple postponed. I can't wait to the time we have no postponements on the schedule, but we're still not quite there yet. David, appreciate the time. As always, enjoy the rest of your night, and we'll talk to you again soon, man. Thank you.
Yeah, guys, thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it.
You bet. There he is, David Amber, Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada, our guest on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Come on in and enjoy hockey and football game day specials at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. Pickup and delivery also available at Atlas Pizza, 403-248-3344. Take a break when we come back. NFL Wildcard Weekend is a couple of days away. Saturday, Cincinnati Bengals at home to the Las Vegas Raiders. We'll kick it all off. Six games on a super wildcard weekend. We'll focus in on one of the teams that has been a surprise in the NFL this season. I'm not sure many people had the Bengals winning 10 games, nor winning the NFC North. We'll go right to Cincy next when we come back on The Big Show. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
This is The Big Show with Will Nault and Logan Gordon on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Welcome back inside the iconic Electric End Controls downtown studio. It is The Big Show live on Sportsnet 960. The iconic Electric End Controls downtown studio is brought to you by iconic Electric End Controls. Get your career started in an iconic way. Apply to join the team today. Find job opportunities at iconicec.ca/careers. I'm Will Nault. He is Logan Gordon. And coming up just a few days away, we are finally here. They extended the season by 1 week. It feels like they extended it by three because we're waiting for the greatest time of the year. It is the NFL playoffs, Super Wild Card Weekend, six games, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. Doubleheader Saturday, tripleheader on Sunday, and of course, Monday Night Football. And a team that will be back in the playoffs is the Cincinnati Bengals. I don't know how many had them in the playoffs, but they'll kick things off on Saturday afternoon against the Las Vegas Raiders. And to talk all things Bengals, it is a pleasure to welcome to the program on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. He is Charlie Goldsmith of the Cincinnati Inquirer. Charlie, first off, thanks for doing this, man. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Good, thank you. Let's dive right in. I mentioned it in my lead-in. I'm not sure where you were. I'm not sure what the feel is in the city. But certainly in the third year under Zach Taylor, I know that a lot of people were high on Joe Burrow. Of course, the high pick of Ja'Marr Chase. There was a lot of good vibes going into the season. But I'm not sure many had them winning the AFC North and hosting a playoff game in the 2021 season. What's the feel in Cincy, and how much have they exceeded expectations this year?
I'll be the first one to admit that I was wrong, predicting the team to win seven games at the beginning of the season. What's happened is three things. First, Joe Burrow is playing at an MVP level, as well as maybe with the exception of Rodgers, Mahomes, and Brady, as well as any quarterback in the NFL. There isn't a quarterback who's more aggressive than Burrow, and he's still completing passes at a higher rate than anyone else. I don't think anyone expected Ja'Marr Chase to be a top five wide receiver in the NFL right now. The complete nature of his game against even the best cornerbacks has kept the Bengals in games against some great opponents. And then their defense, they basically signed an entire group of starters in free agency. It was a bunch of guys who kind of were second-tier players, role players on contending teams before the season. And it turns out the Bengals got a Pro Bowl defensive end and multiple high-level starters, huge upgrades in the secondary and at defensive tackle. So in so many ways, in all three of those areas in particular, they really exceeded expectations.
Speaking of Zach Taylor, 38 years old, came in at 36, didn't have a lot of experience, certainly not as a coordinator. I know that he had a couple of years as college as a coordinator, but in the NFL was on Sean McVay's staff, and all of a sudden the Bengals hire him and was not a head coach anywhere. There was a lot of questions about the hire. He won 6 games his first 2 years. I would say coming into the season, if things went disastrously again in year 3, he might have been on his way out in Cincy. Instead, it's the opposite. Charlie, how has Zach Taylor evolved in his 3 years as head coach in Cincy?
You're right in pointing out the fact that he has had to adjust on the fly in a brand new situation for him. He made 2 huge changes that I'll point to. First is he basically ripped up the run game, admitted that he got his run game coordinator hire wrong in 2019, brought in a brand new wide zone scheme that has ended up fitting perfectly with the passing attack. That was kind of the reason the Bengals added him in the first place. And then the second is he's given Joe Burrow more opportunity outside the pocket. He's put more faith in Burrow's ability to make defenders miss. He's put Burrow in a position where he's not worried about the sack as much. He's more willing to take the chance to get the explosive play. And in those two areas, I could point to games over the last 3 years where maybe Zach had to learn those lessons the hard way. But the fact is, the result is an offense that's as explosive as any in the league.
Just a quick thought. You mentioned it off the top, but Joe Burrow playing like an MVP, came into this year super healthy after a tough end to his rookie season. What's changed in year 2 for Joe Burrow, and how do you expect? I know it's been talked about a little bit in your neck of the woods the last couple of days in press conferences and probably with fans as well. How much does his playoff experience and what he did in college at LSU, how much do you think that's going to play a role, albeit NFL, a completely different game, but how much is that big game experience going to help him in a situation on Saturday?
The Bengals drafted him for a lot of reasons. Everyone's favorite 2 to talk about or what he did in the biggest moments under the brightest lights at LSU in those playoff games. And the second is his combination of competitiveness and leadership and the message he is able to project across the entire team. Those are legitimate, specific things he developed during that stretch at LSU where they had the greatest college football offense maybe of all time. And the result is now he stepped into Cincinnati and immediately started doing those same things. He's carrying the franchise to a higher expectation than I can remember a quarterback doing. You know, maybe some, you could say Ken Anderson and Boomer Esiason held the franchise to this standard, but that was in the 1980s. And Burrow is bringing that type of confidence with, again, some of the elite traits that I mentioned before. He's elevated the franchise and he's changed the perception of an organization that many people thought he wouldn't be able to have success in because of some of the outside factors, and it's all worked because of Burrow.
He is Charlie Goldsmith, Cincinnati Inquirer. He's our guest, all things Bengals, Bengals and Raiders from Cincy this Saturday to kick off Super Wildcard Weekend in the NFL. Logan?
Charlie, you talked about it a bit with Will there, but there was lots of speculation heading into the draft last year that the Bengals should take outstanding offensive lineman from Oregon, Penei Sewell, with that high draft pick to help protect Joe Burrow following that season-ending injury last year. They decide to go with Ja'Marr Chase, go with the tried and true teammates that they had back in college. I guess 2 things to that. The decision to go with Chase over Sewell has obviously paid off in huge dividends for this team. But on the other hand, it left Zach Taylor and company to get creative on how to protect Burrow this year, so he had time to make those passes. What has he done? What has the coaching staff done in general to make sure that their passer had the time to get the ball to this dynamic receiver?
Well, first, it buys you time when you have great receivers. Burrow in the first month proved and put on tape against the Jaguars and against the Vikings in particular that you can't blitz him. Otherwise, he'll pick you apart. And the reason they're so good against blitz has something to do with the fact that they have elite wide receivers across the board at 3 different positions. And then the second thing is something that Taylor has really evolved in as well. He and the offense and the play calling have a much better idea of pass protection plans. The goal is to get the 3 good receivers open in space. Everyone else is focused on protecting Burrow. So you'll see a lot more creative packages. You'll see split backs in the backfield who are solely in pass protection. You'll see tight ends staying and double-teaming edge rushers. You'll see tight ends laying big blocks and then releasing on a route. they've found the nuances and the timing in those small areas to achieve the or to help achieve the offense's ultimate goal, which is just getting Burrow time and getting the receivers open in space.
Talk to me about this defense specifically. You mentioned they brought in some big names. From an outside perspective, Trey Hendrickson looks to be one of the biggest, most successful offseason signings on any defense everywhere, anywhere in the season, bringing him in from New Orleans. He finishes fifth this season in sacks. He's in double digits. He's been able to pressure the quarterback all year long, but they've also been balanced on D. I look at guys like Jesse Bates having another great season, his fourth year as a member of the Bengals. What have they done well defensively this year, Charlie?
I don't think there's a more versatile defense than the Bengals. They have legitimate pass rush threats at all four spots. They have linebackers who are both incredibly reliable against the run and are actually converted defensive backs who have the coverage skills that they learned when they were cornerbacks and safeties in college. And in the secondary, the Bengals prioritized adding depth and experience, and they have former starters coming off the bench at every single position in the secondary. So the end result has been a defense that can play a number of styles of ways. They have a five defensive line front that they use against run-first teams. They have a nickel package that they use pretty much more often, but then a dime package as well, where they have an extra cornerback and a tight end specialist when they need to take away a guy like Travis Kelce in a pass-first scheme. They kind of tailor their scheme and their personnel to whatever the opponent does best, and they have the pieces and the depth to make it work. And that's an overall sign of a good vision and putting a well-rounded defense together.
Let's talk about this game against the Las Vegas Raiders. The Bengals beat the Raiders in the regular season back in week 11, 32-13. That's a long time in an NFL season, even longer when you talk about all the changes and the ups and downs that the Las Vegas Raiders organization has seen over the last couple of weeks. Do you think the Bengals will put a lot of, I don't want to say stock, into that game in week 11? Are they going to be approaching this from a brand new perspective, taking this as a, you know, just this week's opponent, we're not going to worry about what happened in week 11 sort of thing?
I think what the Bengals have some of the most pride in this season is how they responded in their second games of the year against the Baltimore Ravens and against the Pittsburgh Steelers, to be honest, more than anything else. They won each of the first matchups in those division rivalries. And then in the second matchup of each of those division rivalries, they played even better and executed a kind of similar but tweaked game plan for both teams even better than they had the first time. That's the overall mindset that they feel like they've added by adding as many experienced free agents with playoff experience, drafting and signing as many former captains as they did. The goal was for teams to build a team that was able to compartmentalize things like that and respond to potential adversity or narratives that could be held against the team. And overall this year, they've done a really good job of that.
He is Charlie Goldsmith, Cincinnati Inquirer. Just a few more with him. All things Bengals. They'll kick off the Super Wild Card weekend this Saturday, 2:30 Calgary time in Cincy, as they take on the Las Vegas Raiders. January game in Cincy. What's the weather like come Saturday, Charlie?
Cold. And actually, Zach Taylor just spent part of his press conference reminiscing about his days in the CFL. He said he learned how to bundle up from his time as the fourth string quarterback over in Canada. And he kind of has a message to send to the team with them as well. The Bengals are the northest team in the NFL without an indoor practice facility. He wants them outside. He wants them embracing that tough, grinded-out mentality that a lot of playoff teams need to be successful. And, I mean, they're facing a Raiders team that's coming from a warm-weather dome that struggled outdoors. So on a day where it's probably going to be like 20 degrees and frigid with a chance of snow, the Bengals are hoping they can have it any advantage they can get.
Hey, anytime we get a CFL shout out, we're happy. So I like that from Zach Taylor. Speaking of which, we kind of kicked it off with expectations of this team and kind of where they're at. You know, as we look at this game on Saturday, the biggest conversation when you talk to any NFL fan, and I'm sure Bengals fans get sick of it, but Charlie, they're 0-8, their last eight playoff games. They have not won a playoff game since 1990. I know that there's players on this team that weren't even on the field the last time they played a playoff game, and it's one of those stats where it's hard to, you know, kind of read into the 2021 team having any effect on previous playoff games, but just overall, what's the fan base feel? What's the feel around this team as they try to finally snap this playoff losing streak?
I think overall in 2019, when the Bengals made a complete reset and moved away from the Marvin Lewis, Andy Dalton era, it was with the idea in mind that when they made it back to the postseason, everyone would understand that it was a different group. They overhauled literally the entire roster. They don't have a single starter who is a starter on that 2015 playoff team. It's an entirely new coaching staff, an entirely new – the front office is using entirely new strategies. And, again, the goal was to make it to this point where you have a group of players who don't feel burdened by it. I think really in 2013, 14, and 15, the Bengals players felt a sense of, just some sort of setback from the playoff drought and how it weighed on them. And these Bengals and the reason they brought in so many players with winning experience in college is because they feel no connection to it.
Finally, as we let you go, appreciate the time as always. What's this team looking like health-wise going into Saturday? I know there's some questions about their offensive line, how healthy they would be. I know that the Bengals, because of their big win week 17 against the Chiefs, were able to rest some players in week 18. And it sounds like from afar, Charlie, that's paying big benefit here going into the playoffs.
Well, everyone's healthy, basically. I just got the report that all the offensive linemen, with the exception of the one on IR, were full participants in practice today. Aside from that, it's basically only a fourth-string defensive tackle and a third-string cornerback who are dealing with injuries. Injuries aren't going to be an excuse to the Bengals this postseason.
Good stuff. Charlie, appreciate the time, man. Have fun this weekend. And, hey, if the Bengals keep this thing going, maybe we'll talk to you again soon. But appreciate the time today.
Thanks, Charlie.
Talk to you soon.
There he is, Charlie Goldsmith from the Cincinnati Inquirer, our guest on all things Bengals, and he joined us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Come on in and enjoy hockey and football game day specials at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. Pickup and delivery also available at Atlas Pizza, 403-248-3344. Bengals, Raiders, Saturday. As Charlie mentioned, it kind of was an organizational reset in 2019. Certainly moving on from Marvin Lewis was a big part of that. He was the head coach for a lot of those winless playoff games. And here they are back in the playoffs trying to snap this ugly losing streak. And it's one of those stats that is weird, Logan, because the team has changed. And it's not like we're talking about, a lot of the time. Certainly, unless you're making the playoffs in back-to-back years, you're probably not having a very similar roster. So it is a tricky stat, but nonetheless, one their fans feel. And to be able to have this game at home is massive. And if they can get over that hump, I think it would be huge for the organization. Can't wait to see what this game gives us on Saturday. When you talk about the intriguing matchups, we looked at all six wildcard games yesterday. This one might not be at the top of the list, but certainly the Bengals are a team that is a lot of fun to watch. And as I said in my lead-in, I didn't have them winning 10 games or winning the AFC North. They have exceeded expectations. And anytime you can watch Joe Burrow with T. Higgins, Ja'Marr Chase, even Tyler Boyd, then you factor in Joe Mixon and the running game. This is a Bengals team who is a lot of fun to watch. And I think this game Saturday could be a good one.
I think so, too. I think it's got a potential to be one of the better games this weekend. And it's always interesting, and you talk about that stat about them being winless in their last eight playoff games. And it is one of those things that Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase and this group and Zach Taylor, they shouldn't have to wear any of that.
Yeah.
But by virtue of wearing the same uniform and playing in the same place, they sort of do, right? It was the Flames conversation in Anaheim for so many years, Will. Was it, ever Johnny Gaudreau's fault that they hadn't won there in 15
Solely
years?
His fault.
No, but it was, exactly. It was all his fault, right? And it's just one of those things where it shouldn't matter, but in the back of their minds it does, and that the fan base is on edge and nervous going into this because the last eight times have all been unsuccessful. So I'm really curious. I agree with Charlie that, look, Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase and a lot of these guys have big game experience, so this shouldn't be a trial by fire sort of thing. It shouldn't be too out of their comfort zone, but this is the NFL. This is the greatest football league in the world. The Las Vegas Raiders aren't going to go out without a fight. They're going to make it interesting, and you never know what can happen in cold weather games just because you're the home team and should be more prepared for it. doesn't mean you don't have a fumble that goes against you and suddenly causes the game to change momentum-wise, right? So I'm really excited. This is one of the closer ones, I think, on the weekend schedule of games out of the six that I think could go either way. But I'm excited to see, because if Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase can get this first one out of the way and they don't have to have that cloud hanging over them of a long playoff losing streak in Cincinnati, I wonder what the height is, what the ceiling is for this kind of group going forward in just year two of Joe Burrow and year one of Ja'Marr Chase.
Man, certainly one of the best offenses to watch. They've got a lot of weapons, and Joe Burrow has really, you know, nobody better at slinging the football this year in terms of completion percentage and yards per attempt. He is a guy who is not afraid to stretch the field. And yeah, it's been 5 years, 6 years actually, since the team has made the playoffs. But you can guarantee it's in the back of the brain for a lot of those players, just because it is something that has surrounded this franchise. And this is different when you look at the 2011 to 2015 stretch where they made the playoffs five straight years and lost in the wild card playoffs five straight years. Yeah, it's a little bit different, but no doubt it's an organization that is looking to get over the hump, and they've got the pieces to do it. I think the matchup plays in their favor. Yes, they, as you mentioned, beat them in week 11. I don't think you can take a lot of stock into that because a lot has happened since week 11. I loved the way you put it. You know, in the NFL, that seems like a lifetime. So we'll see what Saturday brings. But no doubt about it, the Bengals are a team that has surprised a lot of people, and I can't wait to see what that game looks like and what we get Saturday afternoon in Cincinnati. And how about a CFL shout out today from Zach Taylor?
Yeah, Zach Taylor.
Spent time, by the way, on the practice roster of the Blue Bombers, if you were wondering.
Yeah. Long, so he would understand what cold weather's like there.
Yeah, Winnipeg's a little cold.
Spending a little bit of time in Winnipeg, so he understands it. I don't think it'll be as cold as maybe the Grey Cup game even was in Hamilton this year. But Zach Taylor understands it. And you said it to Charlie. We love our CFL shout outs. And guys that have that sort of experience, you pull it from anywhere, right? Is he ever a successful CFL quarterback? No, but he remembers his time in Winnipeg and going through some cold weather games of his own. Maybe that'll help the Bengals out on Saturday.
He is Charlie Goldsmith, Cincinnati Inquirer. Thank you for jumping on and talking all things Bengals. We're going to do some more of that as the week continues. A special look at the Buffalo Bills tomorrow is the Bills and the Patriots will go head-to-head in the wild card playoffs. In fact, it'll be the game on Saturday evening. So a look at all things Saturday the next couple of days on the Big Show. Looking forward to the Bills conversation tomorrow as Buffalo winning the AFC East for the second straight year. And it's going to be a tough matchup for them against the Patriots, who last time they played, speaking of cold weather, I believe the Patriots threw the football five times in that game. So looking forward to our Buffalo Bills conversation tomorrow. Live inside the Iconic Electric and Controls downtown studio. A reminder, we kick every day off on this program with Peter Labardius. And What Does Lou Say is featured every Friday on the show. Different name, same great contest, as you can send in your hockey questions or sports questions right now to sportsnet.ca/960. Click on the What Does Lou Say contest and listen in on Friday. If your question is selected and read on the air, you could win a pair of lower bowl tickets to an upcoming Flames game, plus a $200 gift card to Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. As What Does Lou Say is brought to you, as always, by Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. Treat yourself to the primetime menu and indulge in two courses, including the mouth-watering Petit Filet for just $55. This is how game day is done. We'll take a break. When we come back, Logan Gordon will take us through the biggest news items of the day, including a big return, not to game action, but to practice action in Las Vegas. All that and more. Headlines kicks off hour three of The Big Show next. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.